You know, I thought something was really interesting that we were singing in that last song, that chorus. I imagine, I wasn't the writer of that, shockingly, but I imagine he's talking about heaven, or she's talking about heaven. And the picture of heaven that I was beginning to get was a pretty amazing picture. It wasn't like we're a bunch of angels on clouds with halos and diapers and playing harps for forever. That wasn't the picture that I got. It was a picture of something beautiful that lacks something that we have. Pain, suffering, difficulty, sin, tragedy. And I think about that picture of heaven, and I wonder why we hold on to this world so tightly. You know what I mean? Anytime I get into a car, I get a little bit nervous because I know, people are crazy drivers. There's lots of tourists around here. This could be the last time, and I pray for safety so that I will live, which, you know, there's a side to that that's good, and I love what Paul said. He said, to live is Christ, but to die, it's gain. And if we really begin to look at Jesus and all that he is, who he is, and if we see heaven for what it is, if we see the life in the age that is to come for what it is, man, it's gain. It's crazy the way that my mind works and why I don't think of God the way that I should or live my life the way that I do so often because that sounds amazing. We're doing a series called Modern Day Idolatry. Is that going up? But anyway, idolatry, that's kind of a strange word, right? Idolatry. In my mind, when I picture idolatry, I picture an old temple with columns made out of whatever that white stone is. Is that marble or concrete? I don't know what it was made out of. They made it out of something. And I picture a temple with a bunch of those columns all around. I picture some altar of some sort in the middle with some animal, poor little animal, tied down and some, you know, priest of some sort, you know, hacking at it and blood splattering everywhere, where, you know, in praise and worship to the sun god or to the moon god or to the god of the sea or the god of the underworld or the god of the harvest. That's what I picture when I hear idolatry. I don't know if you guys are on the same page as me, but it's something like that, which I can relate to in my life so much. Because I pass temples like that all the time on my way to work and on my way home. That's not true. I don't. I don't live 2,000 years ago, and neither do you. See, this is not a word that really is something that we can grasp onto, something that's tangible for us. Idolatry seems like, man, I'm so glad that that doesn't exist anymore, because then there's a couple of commandments I don't have to worry about anymore. I don't have to worry about having no other gods before God or making a graven image of God, because idolatry, that was taken care of, right? No, you know where I'm going with this. You guys are far too smart to trick. I was trying to trick you because I thought you were five. But here's the thing, okay? Idolatry has many forms. And another word that goes really closely with idolatry is worship. Worship and idolatry, they kind of go hand in hand, but they're slightly different. Okay, you are really cold. I'm seeing that. I've got a hoodie right over here. Hi. I'm not walking in front of the speaker, so I don't do feedback. There you go. Now, here's the thing. After I do something like that, you're going to probably start to idolize me, and I don't want that, okay? We are talking about idolatry, modern-day idolatry, and that can take on many forms. So when I think about worship, okay, worship, words that come to my mind when I think of worship, how about words that come to your mind? How about we have a little interaction? What are some words that jump to your mind when you think of worship?
Praise.
Yeah, that's the only one. Now, I don't know if you guys can relate to this, but one time I had a CD. It was back when all the Wows came out. The Wows, those are the one. What was the secular version and the Christian? Now was the secular version. Wow was the Christian one because we're so creative. But one side would be the praise side, and one side would be the worship side. And I didn't know the difference. And I was like, aren't they the same? I don't know. Apparently they're not. But praise is a word. Yeah, I think about glory, majesty, awe, sacrifice. Idolatry obviously comes up. Exaltation, being captivated, being passionate. These are words that I think of when I think of the word worship. Things that are synonymous with that. And so what I wanted to do was I wanted to show some pictures of of things that go on in our day and age that I think that can relate to that word. So why don't you throw up the first one? Okay, right here, we've got some hands in a Bible, okay? I think that's a Bible. And that looks pretty worshipful. Would you guys agree? You've got some hands and they're reading the Bible. If that's not worship, I don't know what it is. Go to the next one. Here we've got... That's not me. That's not me, but it's a preacher of some sort. He is preaching passionately in his blazer. Preaching, that's got to be worshipful, right? Preaching, that's going to be worshipful. What about the next one? Okay, kneeling down, praying, maybe confessing, pleading to God, prayer. That seems like a pretty worshipful thing. Go to the next one. You've got a bunch of people praying for someone. They're laying hands on someone. I don't know what's going on there. I imagine he's sick, and he's wishing that he wasn't sick, and so they're praying for him, okay? Go to the next one. Okay, now you've got prayer. Prayer was going on before, and now you've got a bunch of people praying just like before. They're not gathered around someone, but you've got prayer and meditation. Seems pretty worshipful. Let's go to the next one. Okay, now we've got prayer. You got a bunch of people that really want something to happen. I don't know. They want their team to win, I imagine. It's at a basketball game, and you've got three people praying with their hands like this, and then you've got a mascot who's praying with his or her hands like this, and then you've got a bunch of other people. But you know what? They don't seem very reverent. Now, their position to me looks right. I mean, they're kneeling, and they got their hands together. That looks right, their posture, but they're looking at the camera. I don't know that they're really devoted in their prayer. Why don't you go to the next one? Okay, now this person looks way more devoted in their prayer. This is a girl who's excited about some kind of team and is worried about the score. I can imagine she's looking at the scoreboard and she's thinking there's not enough time left for my team to come back, so I'm going to resort to my last resort and pray. You don't see people praying in the first quarter, right? I've never seen anyone pray at the first quarter. Oh no, oh no, Lord, if you don't show up, we will not score. It's always the fourth quarter or the second half or whatever, the third period, depending on what sport you like. Go to the next one. Okay, now we've got someone bowing. It looks like hands of worship, and I don't know if you can read that, but this is Britney Spears. That he is worshiping the star of Britney Spears. That looks like worship to me. It looks like worship. Okay, go to the next one. Okay, here we go. Now we've got a guy with hands raised, and he's looking at the sunset. Okay, either he's worshiping God in his glory in the sunset or the sun god. I'm not sure, but go to the next one. It looks pretty worshipful to me. Okay, now we've got a bunch of people with their hands raised, right? There's a bunch of lights. Depending on their bracelets, whether it's WWJD or something different, it could be a concert or it could be a church service. I don't really know. But that could definitely be worship. You got a bunch of people with their hands raised. That could definitely be worship. Let's go to the next one. Now you got a bunch of people with their hands raised, and they're going crazy and screaming. That looks like worship too. That's Taylor before she wrote the mean song about the Jonas Brother. So why don't you go to the next one? Okay, this is hands raised. This was like worship. This was like worship in celebration, worship in exaltation, in excitement, in passion for some sort of field. You can imagine that's probably football. It could be soccer or something else you play on a field. Go to the next one. Okay, now you've got a bunch of people that are so excited, so passionate about something that their hands are moved towards the court, and they have painted their bodies blue, the color of their team. They're so passionate about their team that their entire bodies have been painted that color. That seems pretty passionate. It seems like they're pretty captivated by their team. That, to me, looks very worshipful. Let's go to the next one. Now, you have a bunch of people raising their hands. We got the hands raised again. That's kind of a thing that we've seen in worship. Hands raised, people being reverent, people being respectful. To me, that looks a lot like worship of Adolf Hitler. Let's go to the next one. Okay, now we've got some dancing. Okay, and if you're Baptist, if you've been Baptist, I apologize. This is some dancing. And we know that this dancing is worshipful dancing. Why? There's a cross. There's a cross in the background. So this is obviously worshipful dancing. Let's go to the next one. This one, I'm not so sure. This one, either she's dancing or she's pointing somewhere with all of her fingers. But there's no cross, so I don't know if this is worship or not. It could be. Looks kind of devoted, passionate, somber. Let's go to the next one. Okay, this one, you've got people that are so passionate about what they do that they are willing to pay $170 a month or more to go to this thing called a box. And if you go to this box, not only do you get to pay that much a month, but you also get to pay a lot of money to get Under Armour clothing and Nike clothing, and you get to have these cool friends that all have the same desire to throw up from working out. This seems kind of worshipful to me. Go to the next one. Okay, this person is gazing, and this is, to me, doesn't look like a mirror. It looks like a window, but the window has turned into a mirror, which makes this person really excited to look at themselves and gaze at themselves. I'm sure no one else does this, but I used to do this where I would walk by a window and I'd be like, oh, who's that guy? And then I'd move on. One time my family called me out on it, and it was really embarrassing. Go to the next one. Okay, we've got someone worshiping something here, a very sparkly thing. I would just guess that this is not cubic zirconium. This has got to be the real thing in order for her to look at it that way. But she's admiring, right? She's a little bit captivated. That could be worship. Go to the next one. Okay, here we have Beatlemania. You've got a bunch of guards, a bunch of policemen that are trying to fight back the hordes of women that are going nuts over John, Paul, Ringo, and the other one. But they can't, they can barely hold back. These girls are going so nuts. They're so excited. They're so captivated. They're so just overjoyed to be able to even touch, to be able to even like just get near, to see that they're taking down police officers. Let's go to this last one. This one doesn't look as much like worship to me. You got a bunch of people just kind of standing there. They've got a mic. They're all dressed up nice. That's nice. And then you've got a choir. But compared to the last one, which one looks more like worship? The other one. Thank you. Okay, all right, that's enough of that. But okay, are you beginning to grasp the idea of worship in our culture? That in our culture, worship has completely saturated our lives. We worship so many things. We worship fame. We worship success. We worship power. We worship sex. We worship relationships. And what we do is we take this thing. There's this thing that we think is the greatest thing ever. For me, it's been a number of things. Early on, it was like fame through sports, like sports greatness. And I thought if I could only become great at athletics, then I would have what I wanted. Then I would fill the void inside of me because everyone would love me. Everyone would applaud me. Everyone would praise me. For a time, I put my hope and my trust into relationships. I wanted to have a girlfriend because I knew that she would satisfy the longing inside of my heart. If I could only have the right one. And I, what I would do, it was crazy, all the things that I would sacrifice for a girl or for a sport. All the time that I sacrificed, all the money that I sacrificed, all of my friends that I sacrificed. You ever been friends with someone and then they get a girlfriend or a boyfriend and then you don't see them anymore? Yeah, I mean, you're sacrificing other relationships for this relationship. There's a lot of time, there's a lot of money, there's a lot of emotions and stuff that goes into it that we are called to sacrifice for these things that we worship. There was a guy named Solomon who lived about 3,000 years ago. And Solomon, this dude had it all. And he was a very scientific-minded guy. And he said, what I want to do with my life is I want to scientifically discover, is there anything that will satisfy? So what I'm going to do is I'm going to pursue after stuff. And he started with relationships and sex. And he said, you know what? I'm going to pursue after this the most that anyone can. He ended up having 700 wives and 300 concubines. A concubine is like a wife that doesn't have wife rights. They're just for sleeping with. That's all they're for. 300 of those and 700 wives. Okay, 1,000 women. Solomon didn't lack for hair color, eye color, face shape, body type, skin color. Anything Solomon wanted, anything Solomon was attracted to, anything he desired at that moment, he could have it. He could have that desire, that physical urge satisfied at any moment that he wanted. And you know what he said? It's empty. It's meaningless. I've gone to the end of it. I can do more things than anyone can sexually, and it doesn't fill me. It doesn't satisfy me. So he pursued after other things. He pursued after wealth. He became probably the wealthiest man to ever live. It was amazing. People came from all over to see his great wealth and to see his wisdom. And he said, I've got houses, and I've got land, and I've got armies, and I've got forests. And I've got all this stuff that I could ever want. It doesn't satisfy. I still have this emptiness inside. I just need more. And he pursued after wisdom. He said, you know what? I know what it is. If I can have enough wisdom, enough intellectual knowledge, that then I will be happy. Then I will be satisfied. And he became the wisest man to ever walk the face of this earth, besides Jesus. And he said, it's empty. It's meaningless. It's a chasing after the wind. Have you ever tried to chase after the wind? Anyone ever caught it? No, you can't. You can never catch it. There's this great movie clip by it's the new Wall Street, and it's got Shia LaBeouf, or however you say his name, and it's got this other guy in it, and Shia, how do you say his name? He is a guy working on Wall Street, and he's in the office of this guy that has so much money. He's the CEO of this gigantic company on Wall Street, and the guy is offering a job. Okay, and Shy, I'll just call him Shy just for short, because that's what we, when I talk to him, that's what he says. So Shy and I, so Shy says, hey, what's your number? And the guy is a little bit confused. He says, no, what I want to know is, what's the amount of money that would take for you to walk away from this game, this Wall Street game that demands your time, that demands your family sacrifice? How much money would you need to just walk away? And the guy looks at him and he says, more. See, that's what happens. More. It doesn't matter what you pursue after, what you seek after, what you think's going to fill you, what you think's going to satisfy you, you will always want more. You'll never come to the end of it. I bet if we ask everyone in this room and we got down to what it was that was your idol, what was the thing that you were really pursuing after, I do guarantee there'd be none of you that would say, I'm there. I've got enough of it. I don't need any more. Because it demands, you want more. And then what happens, it begins to demand more of you. It demands you to sacrifice more and more. I want you to see this video clip of Tom Brady. Tom Brady has a great name. It's a great name for a number of reasons. It can be a first name or a last name. It's extremely masculine, which is why it works for me. And then also, you can add an IE on the end and take away the Y, and it can be a girl's name. It's just a great name. That's not why we're talking about Tom Brady. Tom Brady is the quarterback of the New England Patriots, and he arguably, statistically, is one of the greatest quarterbacks ever as far as all the accomplishments he's had. Pretty amazing. So 60 Minutes had an interview with him right after he'd won his third Super Bowl title, and I think he was the MVP in at least one of those, okay? Which, if you're a football player, this is the pinnacle of where you can go, winning the Super Bowl and being the Super Bowl MVP. You cannot get any better than that. There's nothing more you can achieve, okay? He's gotten everything that everybody who has ever played football wants to have, and then they do this interview with him. Will you show that for us?
Tom Brady, the quarterback of the New England Patriots, is not only one of the NFL's best players, he's one of the NFL's great stories. At the tender age of 30, he has already won 3 Super Bowls, an accomplishment that ranks him with some of the best quarterbacks ever to play the game. And he's having one of the greatest seasons in pro football history. All he knows how to do is win.
It's what you always wanted.
You're right. It has. And I didn't think it came with all the other baggage, though.
In addition to his success on the field and his sex appeal off it, there is also the $60 million 10-year contract to play with the Patriots.
I mean, I'm making more money now than I ever thought I could ever make playing football.
But with all that money, fame, and career accomplishments, we were surprised to hear this from him.
Why do I have 3 Super Bowl rings and still think there's something greater out there for me? I mean, maybe a lot of people would say, hey, man, this is what it is. I reached my goal, my dream, my life is me. I thank God. It's got to be more than this.
What's the answer?
I wish I knew.
It's crazy. I mean, he's wealthy. He's successful. He's got a lot of power. He's married to a supermodel. I mean, all the things that in our day and age they say, hey, you got to have. And apparently, older men think he's sexy, right? You heard that on the video. He has sex appeal. It was crazy. But I mean, really though, all the things that you think that you could ever want, he has it. And what does he say? There's got to be more. I mean, I don't know what it is, but there's got to be. I mean, this can't be it. I mean, the stuff that I've got, it's nothing. There has to be more than this. There are a number of different ways that this plays out, a number of different things that people get wrapped up in. And the thing is that I want to illustrate to you is not, it's not only that you begin to want more, but it begins to want more of you. And I'm going to have Maddie come up here and read something, read a monologue for you. So Maddie, would you come up here? She's going to read a monologue for us that I think will ring true with some of your hearts. And you'll be able to maybe even see a number of the maybe famous stars that have gone through something like this.
When I was younger, I was mesmerized by the glitz and glam of the bright lights of Hollywood. The A-list actors and glamorous starlets seemed to live lives of continuous euphoria. The world was enamored by them. Their homes, their cars, their style, what they ate, who they dated, their every move. I was drawn to that life. They had it all. I still remember the first starring role I had in our high school musical. Every eye was fixed on me. The audience hung on every word I said, every move I made, and every note I sang. When the curtain call came, the crowd erupted. They stood to their feet. They cheered and whistled. The applause was intoxicating. It hit a nerve that reached down deep into my soul. It poured into a void that I didn't even know existed. I had to have more. When I first stepped into the envy of the public eye, there was a rush of elation and sheer delight. I breathed in their adoring attention. I basked in the light of the steady stream of paparazzi flashbulbs. I had finally arrived and accomplished my dreams. But people are fickle, and they quickly moved on. Fame's appetite demanded more of me, but I had already sacrificed so much. I gave it my time. I forfeited my relationships. I offered up my body and surrendered my life. I had to be adored. The feeling soon faded. It happened more quickly each time. I don't know if the void had gotten bigger or if what I was feeling, it got more and more diluted. In order to be satisfied, I had to have more attention. And in order to get more attention, I had to sacrifice more of myself. It was an endless, demoralizing cycle and left me empty and hopeless. I absolutely hated myself. I couldn't even look in the mirror. I was so ashamed of who I'd become. I despised my career. The people that surrounded me just wanted a piece of me, and there wasn't enough left to go around. I numbed and I medicated till I couldn't feel anything anymore. I acted out in a desperate cry for help. I was arrested, incarcerated. It was all over the news. I was completely humiliated, utterly broken, and helplessly empty. I had everything I had ever wanted, and it completely poisoned my soul.
You could put a number of names with that. You could think about what happened to Lindsay Lohan. You can think about what happened to Macaulay Culkin. You can think about what happened to Miley Cyrus. You can think about Britney Spears. You can think about Charlie Sheen. You can think about Robert Downey Jr. I don't know how many different actors and actresses, people in the limelight, musicians and singers that have had it all, and we could post their mugshot up here for dumb things like shoplifting. You've got all the money you could ever want, and you're stealing stuff. Why? Because I need something else. I have it all, and it doesn't fill me. It doesn't satisfy me. My number is more. More. I just need more. And I step back and I think about that. And it baffles my mind. Okay, so if we could all agree that this isn't working, I mean, if we could look at great tangible examples today and in the past and say, okay, that obviously is not working. Why in the world do we continue down that path? All of us. Why? Scripture has an interesting answer to that. Why don't you grab your Bibles and turn, if you will, to Isaiah, page 390. If you don't have a Bible, you can snatch up one of the beautiful blues. Page 390. God is speaking through Isaiah in chapter 43. Verse 21, he's talking about his own people. He's talking about his creation. And he says about them, he says, these are the people whom I formed for myself that they might declare my praise. Other versions say that they might worship me. That God created humanity to worship. 1 Peter 2:9. If you're going to turn there quickly, you're welcome to. 1 Peter 2:9, page 657, Peter's writing a letter to a bunch of different churches, to a bunch of different people, and he says, but you are a chosen race. You're a royal priesthood. You're a holy nation, a people for God's own possession. Why? That you may proclaim the excellencies of him who called you out of darkness and into his marvelous light. Not only were we created to worship, but now we've been redeemed to worship. See, there's something in us, something in our DNA, something in our genetics, something in our heart, something in our soul that desires worship because we were created that way. That God created us with a need to worship, but not a need to worship just anything. And this is amazing what God does. It can easily seem at this point, that God's really needy. That God says, okay, what I'm going to do is I'm going to create a bunch of people that will just praise me all the time. Because I need praise a lot. I just need more praise. I need sing more, sacrifice your life. I need. But this is not what God does. It's amazing what God does. God created us with a need to be satisfied. Now God is the most all-satisfying being in the universe. And so what God did out of love was he created us with a need to have to continually go to him because he knew that we're crazy and we stray and we go away and we, no matter what, no matter how many times that sex doesn't fill us, we still go back. No matter how many times relationships don't fill us, we still go back. No matter how much money doesn't fill us, we still go after it. And so he created us with a void that would not and could not be satisfied with any of those things so that we would stop chasing those things and run after him so that we might actually be satisfied, so that we might actually be filled, so that we might actually live a life of abundance. This is the way that we were created. This is why we continue to seek to worship stuff, because we were created to worship. But we were created to worship God. Because all of that other stuff, it will never fill us. It will never satisfy. We will always want more. But God is the well of living water that doesn't run dry. Jesus said to this woman, he said, if you come and you drink from me, you'll never thirst again. You will actually be satisfied. So if we have this need to worship, and it's obvious looking at our lives, it's important that we know what worship is. Right? And when you look through Scripture, there are a number of things that jump out. One thing that jumps out to me is I think about the life of David. David, the great king of Israel, who wrote a number of the Psalms. There's this time when David is bringing the Ark of the Covenant into Jerusalem. And the Ark of the Covenant, it was this box that in some way, shape, or form had some tangible elements of the presence of God. It was a holy box. And what would happen is the army of Israel would take it with them then when they go out to fight for the Lord. And it was crazy that it actually had an effect on their battles. And then one time they lost and it was captured. And you need to read the stories. But the people that had the ark, they put it in their temple, and all of a sudden the next morning their gigantic statue of a god was bowing down before the ark, and then it caused this great plague. I mean, it's amazing what was going on. So there's something about the tangible presence of God with the Ark of the Covenant. And so David is bringing it to his city, right? He's bringing the piece of the tangible presence of God into his city. And so as he's bringing it into his city, he's excited, and there are people singing, and David is dancing, and David is wearing this this undergarment that's kind of like what we would consider like a nightgown type deal. That's kind of what they wore back then. It was fashionable. And so he was wearing his undergarment, and he was dancing so mightily, so crazily before God. He was so excited about God and what God was doing, and that he was coming in to their city, that he was dancing so crazy that he kind of exposed himself a couple times. And his wife was a little frustrated. She was frustrated, but she was jealous because of the way that David was dancing before the Lord. And David told her, he said, "Hey, I'll become even more undignified than this." No. Hey, that's what he said. He said, "Okay, you think that's undignified?" He goes, "I don't care what people think about me. I don't care what anyone's saying. I don't care what anyone's thinking. I am so in love. I'm so passionate about God that I will dance to my heart's content." And you think about that with some of the people that worship in the way that they do. You think about the crazy people, the fans that paint themselves, that yell and scream. You think of the people that jump up and down. You don't think about people in a church very often when you think about that kind of worship. So David was dancing before the Lord, and that was worship. And we fast forward to the New Testament, we look at Peter. Peter was one of Jesus' disciples. Jesus had just got finished teaching, and Peter had just come back from fishing, and they caught nothing at all. And this Peter was a professional fisherman, so he knew what he was doing. So he brings his boat back. Jesus steps into his boat, and he teaches a message. And then after the message, Jesus says, "Hey, let's go out to the lake, and let's catch some fish." And Peter says, "Really? You know, we just went out. We didn't catch anything." And I'm sure he's thinking, "Jesus, I'm a professional fisherman. I'll stick to fishing. You stick to preaching, okay? You're not a professional preacher. You don't really know what you're doing. And by the way, at this time of day, we don't catch fish anyway, okay?" But he didn't say that. He said, "Okay, all right, let's go out. Let's go out." So they go out, and they catch such a great catch of fish that their nets begin to break, and they have to call over their buddies, their partners, to come help them bring in all the fish that they caught. And they come back, and Peter falls at Jesus' knees, and he says, "Depart from me, because I'm unworthy." Because Peter had glimpsed something, the same thing that David had glimpsed. He glimpsed a picture of God, and it radically changed his life. Think about Zacchaeus. Jesus comes, is coming through town. He's coming through Jericho. And Zacchaeus is a short guy, so he climbs up in a tree so he can see Jesus. He's heard about Jesus, heard about the teachings he's done, heard about the messages he's preached, heard about the miracles he's performed, and he desperately wants to see Jesus because obviously there's something going on. You see, Zacchaeus was an extremely wealthy man, and obviously that wealth didn't satisfy. Obviously, it didn't fill the void, and he wanted more. And he sees Jesus. Jesus comes over to him. He calls him down from the tree, calls him by name, and says, "Hey, I'm going to come stay at your house." And at that moment, Zacchaeus says, "Hey, Jesus, whatever I have done, man, I'm going to repay it. In fact, I'm going to take half of what I have, I'm going to give it to the poor, and anyone I've defrauded, I'm going to repay them a number of times over." And Jesus said, "Today, salvation has come to this house." You see, Zacchaeus came into contact with Jesus. He saw something. He experienced something that radically changed his life. And so it changed the way that he lived. And so he gave money away to the poor. Mary and Martha, they're sisters. Martha is a task person. She's got a lot of tasks to get done. And so Jesus comes over to their house, and it's a big honor for her to host Jesus. And so there's a number of things she wants to do for the famous rabbi, right? She wants to take care of him. She wants to make sure the house is clean. She wants to make sure there's food ready because it's Jesus is coming over. I mean, you would want to do the same thing. And then her sister Mary just kind of skips out on all the work, and she's sitting at Jesus' feet just listening to everything that he says, just hearing everything that Jesus, she's just soaking it in. And Martha says, "Jesus, tell her to come help me with all the work. I've got responsibilities to do. She's got responsibilities to do. Tell her to help me." And Jesus says, "Martha, Martha, you're anxious and concerned about many things, but only one thing is necessary. Mary has chosen the good portion, and it will not be taken from her." At the end of the Bible, in Revelation, at chapter 1, John, who's a disciple of Jesus, after Jesus has died, after he's resurrected, after he's left the planet, and he sent his spirit, John is having this vision. I mean, this is probably 50 years after Jesus has left. He has this vision where he's taken up into heaven, And he's in this heaven, and heaven is just all kind of crazy stuff, and he's just enamored by it all. And all of a sudden, he hears this voice behind him, this amazing, powerful voice. And he turns to see the voice, and it's Jesus. And he falls down on his face as though dead in worship to Jesus. So you got David dancing, you got Peter bowing and saying, Jesus, get away from me. You got Zacchaeus selling stuff. You've got Mary just listening to Jesus, and you've got John falling down as a dead man. What's going on? What is worship? It seems like it's a number of different things. If we go back into 1 Samuel, Saul, who was the first king of Israel, he wasn't a great king. He was supposed to attack this nation and destroy them utterly, everything. And instead of doing that, he says, you know what I'm going to do? I'm going to keep the choice sheep and the choice goats and the choice cows, the best of the best. I'm going to keep those, and what I'm going to do is I'm going to sacrifice them to God. Now, God had commanded people to sacrifice for him in the Old Testament. There was a Levitical worship system where God was teaching people how to interact with the holy God. And so Saul said, I'm going to worship God. So I'm going to sacrifice stuff to God. And Samuel says, that's not worship. In fact, God doesn't need your sacrifices. He doesn't need bulls and goats. He doesn't need that, Saul. He wants your heart. This is echoed in the book of Amos. In the book of Amos, chapter 5, God is talking to the people of Israel, and he says, I despise your feasts. God had commanded them to do these feasts, by the way. And I take no delight in your solemn assemblies, which they were commanded to do. Even though you offer me burnt offerings and grain offerings, I will not accept them. The peace offerings of your fattened animals, I will not look upon them. Take away from me the noise of your songs. To the melody of your harps, I will not listen. But let justice roll down like waters and righteousness like an ever-flowing stream. In Matthew, Jesus is talking to the Pharisees, and he says, you people, you worship me with your lips, with your words, but your hearts are far from me, and so you worship me in vain. And this gives us the key. This gives us the thing that we've been looking for. What is worship? How do we worship? And Jesus says, it's not about your outward actions. It's about your heart. You can say worshipful things. You can do, quote-unquote, worshipful things. You can act, quote-unquote, in worshipful ways. But if your heart is far from God, it's not worship. It's empty. It's meaningless. It's worthless. It will not fill you. It will not satisfy you. And it will not glorify God. The heart is the key. And I love how Paul builds upon this in 1 Corinthians chapter 10. He says, in whatever you do, whether you eat or drink or anything you do, do it all to the glory of God. Paul says, hey, it doesn't matter what you do. You can do mundane things like eat. You can do mundane things like drink. You can do anything. And if you're doing it to the glory of God, then it's worship. He says in Romans 12, chapter 12, verse 1, he says, in view of God's mercy, so looking at what God did, looking at who God is, in view of his mercy, present yourself as a living sacrifice. This is your spiritual act of worship. The reason that David's dancing was worship and Saul's sacrifice wasn't was because David's heart was captivated by God. The reason that Zacchaeus selling his money was worship, and over in Amos, all these religious things they did, their feast and their assemblies weren't worship, was because his heart was captivated by Jesus. It blows my mind. Okay, the God of the universe created us out of the overflow of love in his heart and said, hey, because I love you, I'm going to create you with a void that will continue to draw you to me because I'm the most satisfying thing in the world. And now I'm going to ask you to come and worship me. And as you worship me, you're going to find yourself fulfilled. You're going to find yourself satisfied. You're going to find yourself overflowing with streams of living water. Jennifer and I, my wife, we got to take a mission trip to the Dominican Republic a number of years back. And this wasn't a mission trip where you go and you go, you know, live in tents or under the stars and rough it. This was kind of a fancy mission trip, which is strange. We were confused by it at first, but what had happened is this big missions organization, they were doing a trip for their board members. And board members are people that give a lot of money, and they make the ministry continue to run. And so you take care of those people. Now, one of them couldn't go, so we kind of got to slide in their spot, which was really neat. So we stayed in this nice hotel with Wi-Fi on a mission trip. It was weird. In the Dominican Republic. And then what we did during the day is we took a bus out to these places called the Batays. This was a place where the work conditions were awful. This was the poorest of the poorest places. And the people that worked there weren't Dominicans. They were actually Haitians, illegal immigrants from Haiti. People from Haiti who had come over to the Dominican Republic seeking a better life. Okay? That's how badly off they were in Haiti, that they would come to a developing nation to get a better life. And they would work, and they couldn't guarantee their pay because they didn't have any papers. They were illegal immigrants, so they couldn't legally get paid. And so they had no standing or foothold against the people that were running these plantations, these sugar plantations, to like demand pay. So they got paid terrible wages. And what had happened is generations down, their kids and their kids were now not citizens of the DR because you couldn't be a citizen of the DR without your parents having papers. And because they weren't born in Haiti, they weren't citizens of Haiti, so they were people without a country. So they had no country. They had no home. They weren't getting paid barely anything. They worked in these horrible conditions for long, long hours. And they lived in these homes that were just crazy. I mean, they were sticks. Sticks built together and like coffee cans put around, like old coffee cans flattened out for the roofs. And they had, their families were, you know, 5, 6, 7 people in their families, but they only had one room and one bed, so they had to sleep in shifts or sleep on the floor. And when it rained, they couldn't sleep on the floor. And these people, they had one change of clothing. They barely had enough food to last them even today, much less longer than that. And we got the opportunity to give them food. We gave them these big bags of rice. And I remember it was Jennifer. She gave this bag of rice to this mom. And the lady looked at her and said, "Thank you so much. This food will feed me and my family for 2 weeks." And I thought, that wouldn't feed me and Jennifer for 2 days. It's crazy. And what's interesting is normally when you walk away from a trip like that and you encounter people like that, you feel really bad for them. You feel really sorry for them and their situation, and it's horrible. And typically, our hearts are touched, and we want to give, and we want to proclaim to everyone that we know, "Hey, you got to give to these people." But the strangest thing happened. As I walked away from those people, the feeling I felt was jealousy. I felt sorry for myself. Because although I wasn't extremely wealthy, I had a lot. Especially compared to them. I had a lot. I never worried about a meal. I never worried about clothes on my back. I never worried about a place I was going to have to stay. I never worried about that. I never was concerned about that. I had a lot. And when I looked at my heart, I was so empty. And when I looked at their hearts, they were so full. The joy that they had, the elation that they had, the love that they had for one another, the way that they played with nothing, with just rocks, was crazy. The joy that they had when they played, the joy that they had with their family, the joy that they had when they sang praises to God was joy like I had never seen. And I walked away jealous because I realized that I had so much and I'd been pursuing after all these things and I had gained lots of things. I had gained some wealth. I had gained some status. I had gained some popularity. I had a great wife. I'd accomplished so many things and yet I was empty and they were full. And they were full because they had come into contact with Jesus. They had really, truly, deeply seen Jesus. They sang songs like "No More Sickness, No More Pain," and they sang it, and I guarantee there would have been tears streaming down their faces as they longed to be in heaven, not just to escape what was going on this earth, but to come near to their Savior, to be intimately connected with the one that they were desperately, deeply in love with. They praised Jesus with their lives. They praised Jesus with their words. They praised Jesus with their actions and their games. They praised Jesus with their generosity. And it convicted me so deeply because I wanted that. I wanted that. I needed that. I called myself a Christian, and I didn't have what they had. And I think about our God and how amazing our God is, that he says, hey, it's not about the stuff. It's not that money's bad. It's not that power's bad. It's not that relationships are bad. It's not that they're bad. It's that they aren't God. And what we are doing is we're making them God. We're putting them in a place where they can't sustain. There's only one being in the entire universe that can sustain the weight of the worship, and that is God. And only one being that when worship reciprocates with a filling of our hearts. And God says, I love you. Come and be filled. Come and drink deeply. Come and be satisfied. Stop running after these things that won't fill, that won't satisfy. And it's not difficult. It's not hard. But I think about our God, and I think about he could complicate it. He could make it really difficult. But all we have to do is just behold Jesus. That's it. When we look at Jesus and we see Jesus in all of his fullness and who he is, worship is the only response that follows a clear picture of the God of the universe. And it's any action that follows that. All we have to do is realize who the God of the universe is and know that he is here and live our lives. So as we continue to sing, it can be worship. As we walk out these doors, it can be worship. As we hang out in the lobby, it can be worship. As you drive over to Earl of Sandwich, that can be worship. As you're standing in line and you're interacting with the employees at Earl and you're treating them like someone who is of infinite value, that can be worship. As you're eating your sandwich and you're just thanking God that he made food and that he made it taste good and he allowed you to have some of the greatest sandwiches ever made at Earl of Sandwich, that can be worship. All of our lives can be worship. When you go home and you sleep, when you wake up tomorrow, when you go to your job, when you interact with friends, it can all be worship. Our lives can be filled with what we desperately need, and God will fill us. That amazes me. It's so easy. We just have to look at Jesus. We have to remember Jesus in view of God's mercy. Live your lives, and you'll live a life of worship. Heavenly Father, we need you so deeply. God, thank you so much that you are awesome, and that you are just so satisfying. God, thank you so much that you have offered us yourself, that you are satisfying and you're giving us yourself. Thank you that it's not complicated, that it's not difficult, that all we have to do is just behold you. Lord, captivate our gaze, captivate our minds, captivate our hearts. Help us to see you and experience you. Help us to drink deeply from the well of living water that will not run dry. God, thank you so much for the ways that you've drawn us near to you. Don't let us stray away. Lord, I pray that you would reveal in our hearts whatever it is that we are seeking after, whatever it is we are worshiping, whether it be relationships, money, fame, success, friendships, popularity, body image. I pray that you'd reveal to our hearts all that it is costing us. And then you'd give us the strength and the courage to step out of it. Give it to you. Lord, fill our hearts with your praise now as we stand and sing you praise. In your Son's name, Jesus Christ, his powerful name,